So when we work in the field of science and interact with other professionals who are trying to be good and make the world better through their scientific research, how can we appreciate what they are doing? At the same time, encourage them to also maybe become spiritual or recognize that is not enough. And if we ourselves have to get funds for such projects, then we often over-glamour, over-promise, or we put up their potential in very flowery terms. So, but internally we feel that this is not going to help. So how can we see this? See, there is a clear relationship between the material and the spiritual. At one level they are different, at another level they are connected. The problem comes when we try to replace the spiritual with the material. So, if we start thinking that by material solutions every problem will be solved, that is where a problem comes up seriously. Why? Because three questions, broadly speaking: origin, value and purpose. Where did we come from? What truly matters in life? And what are we meant to ultimately achieve in life? These are questions that science cannot answer. Is this right or is this wrong? Should I do this or should I not do this? What should be the purpose of my life? The origin, value and purpose. And this is something which even scientists have acknowledged, that Einstein said we can talk about an ethical foundation of science. We cannot talk about a scientific foundation of ethics. And these are the things that matter to us in our lived experience, what we are living for, how are our relationships, how are we living in harmony with what we want to be. All this what really matters to us. So if the material claims to replace the spiritual, it's a problem. That material development alone cannot help people get a meaningful life. It may give them a comfortable life, but that doesn't make it meaningful or joyful. That's internal state of mind and state of being. At the same time, somebody can go to the other extreme and say the spiritual will replace the material. That also is not valid. Arjuna won the Kurukshetra war by what? By the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita that he heard from Krishna, or by the knowledge of archery that he had learned from Drona and that he had practiced throughout his life? Which one?
All of them, yes.
Both.
Both, yeah.
So the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita gave him the direction.
Right.
But the archery knowledge, that was the tool for execution.
Right.
So both had to go in parallel. Similarly, the spiritual does not replace the material. In our tradition also, in the broad Indian tradition, Ayurveda was developed. And Ayurveda focuses, although it is theistic in the sense that it accepts that it is a gift from Dhanvantari, who is a manifestation of Vishnu, but in a functional sense, it looks for material mechanisms. So, okay, this disease is because of this imbalance, and we put in this substance, take this food, that imbalance can reduce, can be corrected. So the spiritual doesn't replace the material. So that both these approaches are extreme. Where some people think that by material progress, spiritual progress is unnecessary. And some people say spiritual progress will make material progress unnecessary. Now the word progress could itself be a loaded term and it can be analyzed what progress is, but let's not go into that right now. The idea is there are needs of people which are to be taken care of. There are diseases which are to be healed. There are living facilities to be provided. If technology can help us to do that, and if we can be a part of that, that's nice. Those who are working for it, we can appreciate them. There is, and when we are working for it as a part of our profession, if we have to, as they say, prop up or pep up, spike up the presentation of a particular fight, that's just a part of the profession. When Kshatriya warriors would fight, they would boast about their powers. And often their boasts would be like over boasts. But that's just how, that's what is part of their profession, and they would do that. So we have to be, we have to understand the level people are at and present Krishna Bhakti accordingly. And present our, not just Krishna Bhakti, even broad spirituality accordingly. So if somebody, whatever is a person's deepest experience, that is their experience of Krishna. That means if somebody is deeply immersed in science, and what is it, looking at these equations, doing these experiments, reading all these books, what is it that gives so much taste in them?
Mm-hmm.
It is actually they are experiencing a manifestation of Krishna
mm-hmm.
through that. But they just don't know it. So there is a direct experience of Krishna by developing bhakti to him, and there is the indirect experience of Krishna, which is through his various manifestations. Now this indirect experience of Krishna is what we need to use to help people get the direct experience of Krishna. So rather than rejecting their present experience, Prabhupada was so inclusive that he said that if an alcoholic is unable to give up alcohol, he says they can think that the taste of alcohol is Krishna. And by thinking of that, one day they will become devotees of Krishna. Not by drinking alcohol, but by seeing the connection. What is it that captivates me about alcohol so much? It is actually Krishna. But that manifestation of Krishna will take us away from Krishna, will fill us with anti-devotional consciousness. So we have to have the expertise that rather than simply saying this is the path of Krishna Bhakti, take it or get lost. They say this is where people are. Okay, how can I help them find a path from where they are to Krishna Bhakti? So connect their deepest experience to Krishna. And if they are working in a mood of wanting to make things better in the world, that is usually in the mode of sattva guna, sattva, or maybe rajas. But whatever it is, that these gunas, these also come from Krishna. Ye chayu sattvika bhava rajasas tamasas chayu matta eveti tan viddhi natvaham teshu temai. So whatever anybody experiences in three modes, they are also experiencing Krishna. But just that Krishna is not restricted to that. Krishna exists beyond that also. And so if we, from a functional perspective, recognize the jurisdiction of the material and the spiritual, even if, say, tomorrow we start using Ayurveda instead of allopathy entirely, all over the world starts adopting that. Still, Ayurveda functionally is material.
Right.
It is not involving any mystical, paranormal, spiritual elements in its direct functioning. So, whichever material system works in the particular situation, we use that. So, today we live in a technocentric world, and technology is what is being used to improve things within their context. So some devotees have this vision of Krishna Bhakti as anti-mainstream culture.
Right.
So it could be anti-mainstream education, anti-mainstream science, anti-mainstream music, anti-mainstream entertainment, everything. Now it could be, but if that is the vision of the how they want to practice bhakti, that's fine. But bhakti is not limited. Bhakti is not limited to a particular music or a particular culture or a particular... even the mainstream culture can be spiritualized. So we can use science in spiritual consciousness. And even if we had... even if we have... say, if in India we have the Govardhan Eco Village, where eco-friendly spiritual living is being demonstrated.
Right.
But many of their recycling plants, and they're based on cutting-edge technology, which is developed using modern sciences, IIT Mumbai thesis, which is used over there. So there is an approach to Krishna Bhakti, which is that reject everything mainstream, and we will demonstrate the alternative in everything.
Mm-hmm.
We'll demonstrate alternative science, alternative economics, mm-hmm. alternative culture,
mm-hmm.
alternative social organization, everything. That's fine. If some devotees feel inspired to do that, they can do that. But that is not essential to Krishna Bhakti. Krishna Bhakti can infuse and energize that activity, but Krishna Bhakti can infuse and energize somebody who's in the mainstream also. So, in a sense, it's like language. Somebody may say that actually, if you want to study and relish Shastra, you have to learn Sanskrit. And they start campaigning for Sanskrit. Wonderful.
Mm.
You want to revise Sanskrit also. But does that mean those who don't speak Sanskrit can't practice bhakti? English is the mainstream language. There is no reference to anything called English in the scriptures.
Okay, yeah.
But our whole outreach is happening in English. So somebody wouldn't be specialized in English. So I would say the worldview that people have, that's also like their conceptual language or intellectual language.
Mm.
So we can present people in alternative language, an alternative worldview, or we can penetrate Krishna Bhakti within the existing worldview.
Yeah.
There are some aspects of that worldview which may be contradictory and which need to be rejected, or at least distanced from. But the worldview itself is, science may lead to atheism, but science is intrinsically non-theistic.
Right.
So it's functionally non-theistic, and that's, we can do it for our purposes. So the only, so if we find that certain devotees are very dismissive about science, then just keep a distance from them and associate with devotees who are more progressively oriented in their understanding and presentation of Krishna Bhakti.
Mm.
Certainly, if we start believing the promises of science and start thinking that science itself is the solution to all problems, then that is not right. But circumstantially, certain problems can be solved by science. At present, this is the problem, and this is the material solution. We don't want to focus all our energy in the hope that material solutions are the ultimate solution. But if we are in a profession where we are expected to provide a material solution, then we provide the material solution. And we gain satisfaction by the fact that we are helping people, find that material solution. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.